11. And on the broadcast this week, I'm going to be sharing a series of interventions, talks that were given at a public event here in Montreal at a space called Alternatives. I organized an event in this space with a bunch of people who contributed to a small publication, a zine, that was simply called Solidarity. And it is a zine where I invited people to share their reflections about their participation in one particular Palestine solidarity action, a protest against forced starvation in Gaza in the context of genocide unleashed by the Israeli state. This, of course, is an issue that has been put forth to international legal authorities and is being litigated right now. I invited people locally who participated in a protest outside of the U.S. consulate here in Montreal to protest for starvation in Gaza. And I invited people who participated in that particular action and who have been joining many solidarity actions over the last months and years to speak about why they continue to show up, why they continue to take the streets at a time when it seems the powerful are not listening. You'll hear from Michelle Hartman at McGill University, a professor and educator, Norma Rantisi at Concordia University from the Geography Department, and Vijay Kolinjivadi of the School of Community and Public Affairs at Concordia University, as well as Nail, who is a Palestinian worker and participant in the Palestine Solidarity Movement in Montreal. Here are the reflections shared by these four voices on this week's edition of Free City Radio.
So I'll first start to say that in response to this mass mobilization here in the city for Palestine, one of the things that comes to mind is how do we think about our infrastructure of resistance? So I think there's a problematic here that we have to name, because we're talking about the hand that is pointing towards Palestine, right? And so we're the hand that is pointing towards Palestine, right? But the center is Palestine, right? And so how do we think about the fact that we need to lift up our hands and point towards Palestine and speak out, but also build an infrastructure that can find a way to actually have a structural relationship to the movement in Palestine that's fighting colonialism on the ground. Of course, that includes the diaspora, but it also calls on us to think about the infrastructures of this society and how do we create alternative infrastructures that can actually build a process of resistance to the financial mechanisms of complicity, but also the cultural and social mechanisms of complicity, right? And this is a moment where we're, I think, called upon to think about those infrastructures and to think about also lifting up and supporting cultural work on the ground in Palestine, in occupied Palestine, that is resisting genocide through cultural production, right? So thinking here about Radio Al-Hara, who we're recording for right now in Bethlehem, in the occupied territories, as a project of cultural production on the ground in Palestine run by Palestinians. So those of you who contributed to this zine, simply called Solidarity, the design is by Leon Low, who worked on this design, I believe, in 2020 or 2021. It was actually a demonstration that was called to protest the Canada-Israel Free Trade Agreement, which I think is, you know, a very clear illustration of the infrastructure of complicity on the part of the Canadian state, one of the first international trade agreements that the Canadian government signed. And then Leon sort of carried that design forward, and then we've included everybody's texts. So for those who shared their reasons for attending a demonstration on July 22nd here in Montreal that was called for by the Palestinian Youth Movement outside of the U.S. consulate to protest genocidal policies and the intention of creating conditions and the realities of mass starvation in Gaza. People have shared some texts. So maybe you could talk about what you shared in this small community publication, but also reflect a little bit about your choice to be part of this effort to create an infrastructure of resistance. And, you know, and think about this sort of process of remaining on the streets in the face of incredible odds. We see Palestinians holding the land with their hearts, with their bodies, dying on the land in resistance to colonialism. And so there can be a cultural disconnect from that reality, but the reality is that, you know, as we know, the infrastructures of power here are inherently connected, which means we are inherently connected. Those are just some thoughts. Maybe I'll just sort of gauge who would like to comment first. Also, please take it in another direction if you'd like to. I'm just sort of sharing some comments for those who might be tuning in on the radio internationally. And shout out to Saeed, Ibrahim, Elias, Yusuf, and Yazin, who launched Radio Al-Hara and have sustained it. It's really become an important platform around the world, so big respect to all of you.
My name's Michelle. And when you asked the question of why did we go out to the demonstration, I was, you know, you can, I could answer it like so many different ways. And one of the really honest answers to give is also is that I would go to every demonstration unless I can't go, right? Like I do, I go to every single demonstration. So what that's meant in the last 2 years, given like what Montreal is like, you could go to a demonstration like every 2 to 3 days, which is, you know, challenging to do when you have a job or you're doing different kinds of things. And this particular demonstration was like a couple days after I had just gotten back from Lebanon. And so I was like really tired and jet lagged and so on. But there was this demonstration. So I thought, okay, like, you know, I'm going to go like I always go. And so I actually did that day think a little bit about it. Like often I don't think about it. I just kind of do it. And one of the things that I really was very aware of because I had just come back was that given how interconnected we are with the kind of social media and the internet, things like these radio shows that we can record here, but you can hear them in Palestine or, you know, like all of these kinds of connections, is that the solidarity that you can show, people notice and it does make a difference. Like people see if there are 15 people on the street of Montreal or 2,000 people on the street of Montreal or 50 people on the streets of Montreal. So many people who I met this summer and Lebanon talked about really being kind of surprised how many people so far away went down on the streets and would chant on the streets and would people kept talking like to me about how hard it must be here and how difficult it is here, and they know about the repression in the universities and the repression on the streets and so on. And like it's like this disconnect for me because people who are there are facing much more serious things than we're facing here. People have had their houses destroyed. People like can be, or we're getting when we were there, droned. Cars were getting droned and people blown up, and like it's much, much more serious kind of consequences that what we face. But that kind of person-to-person solidarity, like real people having real conversations and like seeing those things, and it's really very moving. So like I think that idea that, you know, so in a way we're doing it for ourselves, but in a way, like, even though we are doing it for ourselves, we are also creating connections with people who are really, really, really far away. So I think, you know, like geographically, right? I think that's kind of something that I do think about as part of why I go out, even though it's not sort of like maybe the reason or the main reason or whatever. I think that another thing that I would underline is that, you know, when you talk about building the infrastructure, is that the habit of going and being together is important, and that the being together in a demonstration, there's a lot of different parts of it. Maybe we talk about some of this later, but so I teach literature, so I'm interested in poetry. So I actually am very interested in what happens when people are together and chanting, because chanting is like poetry, right? And you say the same things week after week. And I teach literature, and I teach literature that is between Arabic and English. And so one of the things that I've also been really interested in is how so many people, especially young people, now are learning Arabic, and people want to learn Arabic. And all these people are saying words in Arabic. And like, it's really weird, you know, for like, it's not something that I've been used to, is like people always are asking what the chants mean, and they're trying to learn the words, and they're repeating the words, and there's all these non-Arabic speaking people chanting Arabic chants week after week. Is really not something I've experienced in my life, and that's really interesting. And I think that's both solidarity, but it's also education, but that also like builds capacity, as we say, right? And that kind of that's one of the things in the demonstrations that is what you could put in the kind of category of education. And I think education or learning is part of what we also do in demonstrations. Like, so we've got the language example and the poetry example and this like being together and being in the practice of like walking together. But like when you go to a demonstration, you also like talk to people, and you talk to people like, let's say, you know, Norma, who I'm sitting next to, like we would see each other and maybe we would catch up and we would talk and we'd have that space. Or maybe I see Stefan, who I haven't seen in a long time, but maybe I talk to some random person because they're standing next to me. And then I've met like a neighbor, or I've met another person, and we build our communities like that too. And that also builds our infrastructures, like, because we're coming together around different things. Like, I can't think of any demonstration I've been to where I haven't like some new person, thing, idea, chant, political analysis hasn't come up. Like every demonstration, like there's always something new, there's always something different, there's always some way that you can like push yourself into thinking about things. And then that itself builds us up together, like individually, but also as communities, to then do this work, right?
Maybe I'll just add to that, because I really felt like that was a great overview of a lot of key motivations for going out and being together, is that people there are also so aware of this intricate links and the power kind of dynamics. And they're watching. They are. You're right. I mean, I know it's the case, like you were saying, in Lebanon, but it's also the case in Palestine. I was there last summer, too, and so many people were talking about the fact that they were watching people on the street, and that they were so moved by youth, like, you know, making claims on their governments and their institutions. And at the time, I was, meeting with one human rights, director of a human rights organization who had been through a lot, imprisoned, had their office completely, like, you know, ransacked, and even they were locked out for a bit, and saying, you know, like, this gives us some hope, at least, to know that in the heart of empire, we're seeing people going out and being very visible and, you know, and taking space and mobilizing. So I think that's really critical, too. So there are days, actually, you mentioned cynicism, where I don't want to go to the demos, to be honest. I'm just tired of doing this week in, week out, you know, I don't know, and feeling some futility to it because of just the concentration of power, right? And the way it's wielded in Gaza in particular. But sometimes that very person's words will, you know, echo in my ears, and I'll think, you know, this is not about you and your own sense of futility. There's something bigger that has to drive you, right? And so, yeah, I think that's always important, is to keeping those connections in mind, right? That it's not just even, you know, about here and now, but it's about the ripple effects, you know, even across oceans. And, but But in terms of the here and now, to the extent that it really is significant and matters, I think, as Michelle has mentioned, you know, these are the seeds of building the communities, right, of forming relationships that then we can carry into other spaces. You know, I've been walking on the street with many of the people around this table, actually, some of whom I didn't even know their names until today, right? So yeah, that's critical for growing a movement.
I actually prepared something that I might want to say, and I think maybe it speaks a little bit to what Norma said about this futility of being there in week after week, but then knowing there's something deeper, perhaps more central to all of this, that's more than just what it is of being there on the street. It's something more. And so I'll read it. And I wrote this very, very fast. So it came out of emotion, so it's kind of, but it is just something that really I had to kind of put down. So I'll just read it. And it just to say, it comes also from a conversation I had with my friend Tamadur, who grew up, who was in Belgium now, unable to go back home, grew up in the Al Arub refugee camp in the south of the West Bank, one of the things that she told me recently was, we are the creative force for our life. And so I was just thinking that this is a secret that the colonizer can never control us, because they'll never be able to fully understand that secret. And that's why we are alive. That's why we still exist. That's why our heart beats and our eyes grow wide when we see each other in these demos. Strangers, those we know, and all that is, you know, that in that moment it means everything to be there. It means it all to be there in that moment, and it's a force that can't be controlled. So this colonial order exists, basically giving complete support to this to what we are seeing unfolding right now in Gaza, but over the last 70 years plus, is this living, what we are seeing is this kind of living, beating heart of this, of what has kept 530 years now of this racial violent global, this global racial empire going. And the complicity of all the Western states in fueling it should not be a surprise because of that, I think. So I think it's really the only thing they know, and it's how to be violent. That's all they know. And I was thinking of something that Francesca Albanese wrote in the Insecurity Monitor. She's the UN Special Rapporteur for the Occupied Palestine Territory. She said that settler colonial societies always hold the seeds of genocide. They can and will do it again and again. And so they are maintaining the conditions of ethnic cleansing and erasure. And as we stand in a settler colonial society now, we know that this society is capable of capable of maintaining those conditions again and again and again, and will continue to do that. So my research and what I teach is about kind of the cause and consequence of our global ecological crisis. I argue in the work that I do that it is the culmination, the ecological breakdown is the culmination of global racial empire. It's an ecologizing project. Global racial empire is an ecology. It's an ecologizing project of control and domination. So that means unfreedom, removing the freedom of some people or some place, some nature, some places, of calculability, of predictability, of efficiency. It's this mentality of white supremacy is one of normalizing murder while still talking about creating a, quote, just and equal world or a society with human rights. And but really, there's no limit to what they can do to maintain that world order and to keep us all quiet, complacent, and acquiescent to it. I think about the people who walk in the when we are protesting. There are many people who just walk by, and sometimes, you know, there are people who try to bring them in to the demonstration. And it's not that, you know, there's many reasons why people are not necessarily marching. But the structure of the society is one that wants to keep us walking to the next shop, walk us to the next business we have to do, keep our schedules going. It's not even a world order, let's say, because the views of this sort of white supremacist view, this global racial project, let's say, disregards the earth, the very planet that keeps them alive. So the joke is on them. Their view is to remove our humanity, to remove all life, to make us all dead. And again, the joke is on them. So I often think about how it's possible for people to care about all living things, about living in general, about life, about themselves, about their mothers, about their children, about their partners, about their cats, about any possible reason to be living, if one is normalizing their complicity in mass murder by remaining quiet in front of their leaders and employers. I just, that to me, if I have to say it in that way, I would say it that way. And I include myself to some degree there because my words get ahead of my actions. And I again, I recall my friend Tamador's voice when she says, "Do not let fear control you. Justice has no meaning in any other situation if Palestine is not liberated. People cannot be fighting for a better environment, for a society that will meet their needs, unless their society is based upon deinvestment in the settler colonial project and reinvestment in the autonomy to revitalize life ways that have been damaged because of this project." That is the infrastructure that we need to build, I think. And that's why Palestine is so important for everything that it means to be alive right now in this world today, to stop this mass murder of people. And if a society like this is gaining symbolically, materially, rhetorically, in any way from what is happening, the question is not even about complacency. It's about pure joy. The joy of murder and killing for gain, a gain in political position, a gain in arms sale, a gain in academic collaboration, an economic gain in a new trading partner, whatever gain it may be. And that is a depraved, sick, psychopathic condition. One I will never reject, I won't reject as long as I am alive. So in my intervention in the zine, I wrote, you know, the act of protesting will not give food to those in Gaza. But by being there, I ask, you know, does it help us to be alive? You know, are we alive? What does it truly mean to be alive today in that sense? They tell us that, you know, we can eat healthy to be alive, or to, you know, take these pills that will be alive. But that's not stopping our collective deadening because of this violent system. So I go out on the street as much as I'm able to recall life, and that, yeah, we are this creative force for the world we want. And we go out to remember life in each other's eyes. For a liberated Palestine. And actually, finally, just to say, you know, we don't even need a motivation to go. We know in our heart, we know in our life, if we are alive, that we have to be out there as much as we can.
Yeah, so I guess going off of what Michelle said, you know, I was there because I made myself a promise that I'd be at any protest. And I've lived in Montreal for 7 years now, and before that was easy, and now it's hard because there's a lot of things happening, and that's amazing. And, you know, I think the number one reason is personal. It's emotional. It is invigorating to be on the street. You got the drummers, you have people out there, you have the chanting. It feels like a rally sometimes, and sometimes it feels a bit bad even, because you're like, I'm kind of enjoying myself, and it's, you know, there's very serious things happening. It's an emotional release. But you also, the way most of us have experienced this genocide, I mean, everyone in this room, except Norma and Michelle and maybe others who've recently traveled to Palestine and Lebanon, it's through our phones. And it's really nice to be in real life and see who your friends are and see who your enemies are, because sometimes they show up too. And it is nice to kind of ground yourself and be like, that motherfucker is standing, I don't know if I can swear, that motherfucker is standing to support the death of children, and he's proud of it. And it is good to remind yourself that that's out there, because it helps you steel yourself for what you have to do and how you have to show up. And I think if I were to take your question in another direction, it's almost that, you know, why do we go there? It's kind of obvious to all of us who are there, but why are people not there? You know, as Vijay kind of alluded to, the people who walk by. And I've asked a few people that I know, because I know they're sympathetic people, and a lot of them are from countries who have suffered under colonization. Some of them are Palestinian. Some of them are Lebanese. They feel like it's not going to make a difference. And I would really ask those people, in countries where they're not protesting, what's happening? In Egypt, we haven't seen a mass protest movement. They're signing gas deals at the time when starvation is at the peak. In Jordan, the protests have died, and people notice this. You know, I saw a video a little while ago. People probably know Sama Al-Khudur. She's a very prominent member of her Montreal community. She lost her daughter in Gaza due to the racist immigration policies of Mark Miller and Justin Trudeau. And she posted a video of children who saw a video of a protest in Montreal, and they were chanting along, you know, the way that they saw us chanting in the video. So, and if I were to push back on the idea of protests a little bit, you know, in Canada, you know, and in the West, protests are kind of part of how we pitch ourselves to the world. It's a sign that we live in a civilized, democratic society. It can very easily turn to a tool of crushing dissent. So I think it's really important to go to those protests with the mentality of, you're building something. You are. This is a start point, not an end point. You know, they should get. It's a cumulative effect too. You know, we've been very consistent. I think more consistent than any other movement I've seen in my lifetime. And when you go every week, you see the same people. You start to have familiarity with them, and you build those connections, and that can lead you to the next thing. If the protests aren't working, well, then here you have the platform to move on. So.
That was the voices of four people who contributed to a zine that I published. I'm Stefan Christoph, the host of Free City Radio, and the zine is simply called Solidarity. It is looking at why continuing to show up and bear witness to the injustice in Palestine is important. Thank you so much to Michelle Hartman, professor at McGill University, Norma Rantisi of the Geography Department at Concordia, Vijay Kolanjivadi of the School of Community and Public Affairs at Concordia University, and Nail, who is a Palestinian worker and protest participant. You can find this zine online through the Just Seeds Artist Cooperative. Just visit justseeds.org. And you can check out their blog section. There's a free PDF download. I'm Stefan Christoph. Thanks for tuning in to this week's edition of Free City Radio. And thanks to the Social Justice Center at Concordia University for your support. We broadcast weekly on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal on Wednesdays at 11 a.m. on CJLO 1690 a.m. also in Montreal. On Thursdays at 8 a.m. on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg, on Tuesdays at 8 a.m. and Fridays at 1:30 p.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, on Wednesdays at 11:30 a.m. on CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria on Saturdays at 7 a.m. on Met Radio 1280 a.m. in Toronto on Fridays at 5:30 a.m. on CKCU 93.1 FM in Ottawa on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. on CJSF 90.1 FM in Vancouver on Thursdays at 4:30 p.m. and on CHMA 106.9 FM in Sackville, New Brunswick on Tuesdays at 10 a.m. You can find our archives at soundcloud.com/freecityradio. I'm Stefan Christoph. Thanks so much for tuning in, and I'll speak to you next week.